Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And joined once again by the full crew. We took a little bit of time off, you know, a little time to mourn, you know, the season that was. Take a little break, a little exhale from, you know, Vikings football. I mean, we know JR didn't take a break from football, but a little break from Vikings football. Recharge the battery a little bit, and now we're back. And so, you know, without further ado, we'll introduce the crew. QB1, JR, what's going on, my man? Taking a break from the podcast circuit to come back and talk to the boys.
Yeah, man. Happy to be back. There's no place like home. So, you know, I'm happy to be back.
Yes, sir. And we are happy to have you. And fresh off the plane and maybe straight to the doghouse, we got our man, wide receiver one. What's going on, Miles?
Yeah, got a little bit of that, you know, jet lag. Wife's already mad at me. So
we'll make efficient use of time here. How's Teddy doing though? How's Teddy?
Teddy's good. Teddy missed me from what it seems like, so that's good.
That's good.
He's getting big. He's like 73 pounds or something like that. So
man.
Yeah, he's a big boy. He's a big softy though.
Big boy. And you know, we do have to keep things moving along because you know, the hardest working man in sports and entertainment. In the Twin Cities, we got Saxy Prince, you know, multitasking, getting ready for a gig while he's on with us today. What's going on, Saxy Prince?
Yeah, what's up, y'all? Yeah, I'm currently getting dressed as we speak. So, you know, if I cut off for a second or whatnot, just put on my clothes and whatnot. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Saxy Prince, you know, as per usual, he's going to do some podcasting with us. Probably go pick up a ride on Uber on his way down to the studio to record some music. You know, never stops. But we're going to switch up the segment a little bit today because, you know, Prince is multitasking. And I'm going to flip it to JR because I think JR's got a question that he wanted to ask.
So this is a question that I really kind of thought out for a little while. And y'all know I'm not a big movie guy like that. So I kind of catered it to y'all's arena. So here's the question. If you were starting an NFL franchise with any fictional football player from a movie, who would it be?
Oh man, well, you got to go first, man.
So mine is Bobby Boucher, the water boy. That's my guy. That's my
guy.
I love it. He's just relentless. He's not going to know how much money he's being paid. Let's just be honest. He wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer. So we probably can get him for cheap, even though we do have the rookie scale. But anyway, that's a subject for another day. Just relentless, just loves football, loves his mama too. But he's a guy I'd love to build my defense around. So the water boy, Bobby Boucher, would be my guy.
All right, I like that one. How about you, Miles? What you going? Fictional football character to start your team.
Oh, I was trying to think about this. Come back to me.
Okay, all right. Saxy Prince, what you got for us, man?
Well, I was just actually looking up.
I got it.
Okay, go ahead, Miles. Give me a second.
All right, Miles is back.
I told you this was a great question.
What's going on, Miles?
It's got to be Julius Campbell from Remember the Titans. Like, okay. I know he's – yeah, like – yeah, I mean
– you keep going with it, man.
He's an outside linebacker who's about to – he's like Anthony Barr light, you know what I'm saying? Like – rush the passer, outside linebacker. He's, you know, tall, maybe a little leaner, but you know he's that type of athlete that you want you know rush getting after the quarterback. So, and he's got that heart, you know. So I'm all about it.
Okay. Saxy Prince, I think it's your turn. Miles might want to hop back in, but I think right now it's your turn.
I'm looking for his name actually right now.
If you don't know his name, he can't be a man. You can't start your franchise if you don't know the name.
Come on, man.
Come on, y'all. But he played I'm actually going to go with another Remember the Titans guy. He actually played the quarterback. He had, like, the really long blonde hair, whatever.
Sunshine.
The reason why I picked
Sunshine. That's what it was.
Quarterback? Sexy Prince? What about Brand?
What about Rev?
I'm disappointed. I am disappointed in Prince.
He cut out. What about Rev?
I am shocked, though. Sexy Prince picking a quarterback. That is completely off-brand for him. Completely off-brand.
My bad, y'all.
Are you back?
Disappointed. I can't believe you skipped over Willie Beeman.
But you didn't pick Brian Gosling's character?
No, because he was a complete liability in coverage. So here's why I picked Sunshine, right? So I don't know if you guys remember that movie, remember the time it's on the final play. I think they call an end around play or whatever the case is. Sunshine, lead blocker, takes out two guys for the go-ahead touchdown for the win. That's the kind of guy I want to start my franchise with. That's that Marcus Mariota. I'm gonna throw a block to win the championship for my team. So I'm starting it with Sunshine.
Okay. All right. Well, JR kind of just took mine, yelling at Sexy Prince. I mean, it was, because we are fans of one Teddy Bridgewater over here. And since, he was in the scouting report for Teddy coming out, Willie Beeman was probably going to be my guy. But then, since we're going another way, because, we also love Case Keenum on this podcast sometimes. And so I'm going to go another way. And I'm going to go with Shane Falco. From the replacements as my comp for Case Keenum and my other quarterback who I might start my franchise with. Because, he turned it around at the end. He got it figured out after years of maybe just being eyed. But that was a good question, JR. I like that one.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, we might have to put that up as a poll to get some folks to weigh in on this one here. But as we move things along.
Orlando Jones from the wide receiver, the deep threat. just give him the stick him and he good to go.
Oh man, Darnell Jefferson, Alvin Mack. I mean, there's so many good ones you can go with, man.
Tidwell,
sir.
Gary McGuire.
Tidwell, yes.
Yeah. Tidwell was another good one. Yeah, man. We might have to set up a bracket or something. This is a good one here. You can keep going forever on this one.
We need to do a mock draft. That's what we need.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, let's turn the corner a little bit here. It's the off season, and hearts were broken all around. Vikings Twitter, Vikings fandom earlier this week, where the man who everyone, even Judd Zulgad, Matthew Coller, I think every person on Vikings Twitter had got themselves ready to start the Alex Smith era in Minnesota, and Washington stole him from us. But they paid a lot. So, it's been a little while since we got together. JR, I'll kick it off with you here. I guess, what were your thoughts when you saw that trade kind of randomly come across? And I guess, what are your thoughts on the price, both in trade and in price for Alex Smith?
I thought it was shocking, honestly. And I thought it was a reach. Just giving Alex Smith $71 million guaranteed, and then you're giving up a very valuable young player in Kendall Fuller, who is arguably one of the better nickel corners in all of the NFL. And my whole issue with it was, why were you so comfortable giving that money to Alex Smith and not to Kirk Cousins? Because, they're basically the same guy, honestly, but Kirk Cousins is 4 or 5 years younger than what Alex Smith is. So it just didn't really make a lot of sense to me. And signing him to that long-term deal at 34 years old, the deal didn't make a lot of sense to me from the Redskins standpoint. But from the Chiefs standpoint, on the flip side, I thought it was a great deal for them. Cornerback was a big need for them. And they got a great young player in Kendall Fuller. And now they free up $17 million in cap room. And the show is now the Patrick Mahomes show, which is what they wanted coming into next season in 2018 anyway. So, and they also get a draft pick as well, which is great.
Yeah, and I know we had lots of kind of back and forth of it, cracking jokes and things about it. But Miles, I guess, what's your take on this trade? And I guess most people have been really roasting Washington for, overpaying on both sides of this. I guess, can you come up with an argument from the Washington perspective that maybe explains the way, why, or the reasons they did what they did?
Well, let's get technical real quick. Technically, this trade is not a real thing. but I'm just playing. Just because the league year hasn't started yet, but I'm just playing. Yeah, I think a couple things for Washington. I think the biggest thing is when they decided to franchise tag Kirk Cousins for the second time last year and back-to-back years, I think that was the end between the relationship between Washington and Kirk Cousins, just for the fact that, you know, the year before that, I think he had a really good season, and he was still in his early, you know, mid to late 20s, you know, hitting that prime years, and they still decided they wouldn't commit to him long-term. Again, it might say a little bit more about Kirk Cousins, but I'm not sure. And then for them to decide to, you know, franchise tag him again, I think it drove Kirk Cousins' asking price to Washington, I think, up even higher than it might have potentially been had they decided to just go with a regular long-term extension, or maybe they just never could come to a full agreement on an extension. I'm not sure, but I think a rationale to kind of go with for Washington here is, you know, you're about to lose a franchise type quarterback. You don't have, you're in a position in the draft where you'd have to give up a lot to trade up to go get one of the top tier guys in the draft, you know, that, you know, the top five picks. And especially since a lot of those teams are QB needy anyways, they decided, let's go do the next best thing and go get, you know, our quarterback, whether it's, you know, through free agency or whatever. Let's not even wait till free agency. Let's just go get our guy now. And they liked enough from what they saw from Alex Smith, because they had to have done their homework, and they decided, let's give up a second round pick, or is it a third? It sounds like a third, and we're pretty heavy at defensive back. So I still don't agree with the person that they gave up, but we have we're pretty loaded at the defensive back position in terms of what we have. So let's sweeten the deal a little bit let's go get our quarterback, because we know how important this position is. He had a career year last year. And let's extend it to a long-term contract, and then be patient with going to get our young up-and-coming quarterback to succeed Alex Smith. But let's sign him to a long-term contract to let him know that he's our guy for the foreseeable future. So I think for so how many QB needy teams there are in the NFL right now, Washington decided, we're not going to wait. We're not going to, you know, try to overpay in a free agent or anything like that, or try to overpay in the draft. We're just going to go get a guy that we know is a really good quarterback and who had a top 10 season this year. And we're going to go make him our guy instead of waiting around and, you know, for the price point to potentially be higher. So they decided to make the move now. And I kind of agree with that sense of it, of not waiting around.
Yeah. And so, Saxy Prince, I'm going to kind of switch gears a little bit here. We're going to go off the show sheet, because, you know, one of the things JR just said was, you know, Alex Smith and Kirk Cousins are the same guy. So I go and I'm looking up to kind of, you know, compare, you know, their, you know, career stats to one another. But then there were some other names that I threw in. I obviously threw in the three quarterbacks that, you know, the Vikings have had over the past couple seasons. But then Matthew Collar wrote an article that received quite a bit of backlash, scorn from Vikings faithful, in which his kind of number one non-mainstream option for the Vikings was Tyrod Taylor. And so as I'm looking here at a comparison of, you know, all these guys, and, you know, passer rating is not the greatest stat. Obviously, we know that, and you take it with a grain of salt. But when you're kind of ranking them, Kirk Cousins has the highest passer rating, but Tyrod Taylor is number two when you're looking at their careers, followed by Alex Smith, then Teddy Bridgewater, Case Keenum, and Sam Bradford. You're looking at yards per attempt. You know, again, you have Kirk Cousins number one. You know, in this one, Teddy Bridgewater actually jumps up to number two. Sitting in number three is your man Tyrod Taylor. Adjusted net yards per attempt, Kirk Cousins again, number one. Number two, Tyrod Taylor. Why do people seem to dismiss or dislike or hate the idea of Tyrod Taylor as a potential stopgap quarterback for the Vikings while embracing Alex Smith, who, when you look at their careers, has been not that much better, if you are even going to say that he's better than Tyrod Taylor based on how they performed on the field?
Well, I mean, it's still a stigma that exists with, you know, athletic quarterbacks who can also, you know, who can run as well as, you know, they can, they're throwing the football.
But Alex Smith is also an athletic quarterback. I mean, he tested like Cam Newton coming out.
Black quarterbacks who can run are not treated the same way that white athletic quarterbacks who can run. They're just looked at as different. You know, there are a lot of people who still don't respect Russell Wilson. There's a lot of people who, again, they don't respect Colin Kaepernick. They don't respect Tyrod Taylor. And I mean, I've been a fan of Tyrod Taylor for a little bit. I think, Jason, you were the kind of one who kind of hinted at him a while back. Given the situation that he was in, Buffalo lost a lot of weapons this year to St. Louis, or Los Angeles, excuse me. And, you know, he was still able, I think, to produce at, you know, what he was probably like league average when you break down a lot of his numbers. When I look at those kinds of quarterbacks, and I think that's partially why I like Teddy Bridgewater. When I look at a guy who, if you take away weapons, if you take away something that he can actually work with, and he's still able to perform at roughly around league average, you know, then I kind of want to see him in a system that, you know, cater towards his needs, as well as he's around weapons that he can actually succeed in. And my biggest thing for athletic quarterbacks too is the defenses are getting faster, right? At an astronomical rate compared to, you know, tackles and offensive lines. So I think having another, you know, kind of threat at, you know, quarterback, not just to be able to throw the football, but be able to have the mobility, you know, really just opens up what offenses can do, and how opposing defenses really have to try to game plan. Jason, I think you said it off air. It's really, really hard to game plan for some of these athletic quarterbacks that exist. And they are quarterbacks who can run, not running quarterbacks. And it's just easier to put in your mind someone like Alex Smith, who I think he's improved a lot as a passer, as well as, you know, Kirk Cousins. But I think it's when we look at guys like Aaron Rodgers, you know, we don't necessarily think about him as a running quarterback, but I mean, he's killed us time and time again for running. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of factors that play into this, and people aren't always honest with themselves with, you know, how the perception of it. But I'm a fan of Tyrod Taylor because I think that if, you know, the Teddy Bridgewater thing doesn't work out, he'd be a perfect quarterback to, you know, to bring here for a couple of years while you're grooming in a new guy.
Awesome. I guess move it along, because obviously, you know, I guess the more mainstream take now is that Alex Smith is off the market. And, you know, the next name that's out there is Kirk Cousins. I mean, that's the guy. He's the one. He's the person that everyone wants. And so, you know, JR, you are, you know, our resident quarterback here, I guess. What are your thoughts on Kirk Cousins, just kind of the player, and what tier of quarterback would you put him in?
Like I told you guys, I'm a big fan of Kirk Cousins as far as his on-the-field ability. He's obviously not in that elite category, but I think he's in that top 10 to 12 range. So he would probably be in that third tier, not the 1 through 5 or 6 through 10, but he's probably that 11, 12 to 13 range. I mean, he's good, guys. I love Kirk Cousins, but the thing you have to understand about Kirk Cousins is that he has to have adequate surroundings in order to succeed. And I think his supporting cast in Washington is vastly underrated in what he had to work with. Now, last year was sort of an outlier as far as the supporting cast that he did have. They suffered some injuries. But before last season, he had one of the better supporting casts in the NFL as far as weapons on the perimeter. He had DeSean Jackson. He had Pierre Garçon. He had Jameson Crowder and Jordan Reed in spots. He's never had – well, I don't know Washington's actual – statistics in the running game, but I'm sure they've probably been middle of the pack considering that they do have some good pieces up front, Trent Williams and Brandon Scherff. So I'm sure their running game hasn't been pedestrian. They haven't had a huge name in the backfield. It's been musical chairs in their backfield as far as who the actual guy is back there, but I'm sure they've probably been middle of the road as far as a running game. Now on the flip side of that, Kirk Cousins on the Vikings. It makes all the sense in the world. This by far will probably be his best supporting cast from an all-around team standpoint. Minnesota obviously has an elite defense. Diggs, Thielen, and Rudolph will be good weapons on the perimeter. And you have a good backfield, whether it's Jerick McKinnon and Dalvin Cook and Latavius Murray, whichever of those guys is the lead guy next year. So I like Kirk Cousins. I think it will be a great fit in Minnesota. The one thing that does give me pause about the situation is the financial side of it. He's going to command $28 to $30 million. His reps have already come out and said that they want to at least rival or even exceed what Matthew Stafford got, and he got a five-year, $135 million deal. And I'm sure that's the range that Kirk Cousins is looking for. Yes, he said money does not matter to him. He wants to win. But at the end of the day, I just don't believe that whenever a guy is hitting the unrestricted free agent market for the first time, and being that Kirk Cousins is 30, he's no guaranteed to get another big deal like this. So I think he's going to look to cash out and go to the best opportunity and where the financial money is the best for him. So I like Kirk Cousins, but the financial side just doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. All right. So Miles, you know, friend of the show, friend of the website, Luke Braun, you know, he kind of went on a bit of an anti-Kirk Cousins mini rant, we'll say, on Twitter, pointing out some things, you know, using the Pro Football Focus QB catalog. And, you know, pointing out that, you know, when you look at some particular stats, like let's say we look at adjusted completion percentage, you know, Case Keenum's actually better than Kirk Cousins. Or when you look at, you know, deep passing, you know, Kirk is just, I mean, he's better than Case was this past season, but not by a ton. So I guess what are your thoughts on the argument that, you know, even with Kirk Cousins might be the name, but as you start to go and maybe look deeper into things, is he really that different than what Case Keenum is?
I think the biggest thing that maybe, you know, for me that I would kind of argue against that is the fact that, excuse me, we've seen Kirk Cousins do it over, you know, more than one season. We've seen him do it on a bit more of a consistent scale than Case Keenum has. We've seen Kirk Cousins run an offense, you know, that's tailored around providing him weapons, a solid offensive line. So you've kind of seen that. And then I think as a fan and as a trying to be a little, you know, a little less, you know, homerish about the move and situation, you try to, you know, find a perspective about it, but a different perspective. But like with Kirk Cousins, you know, he's arguably one of the best quarterbacks to hit free agency in since like Drew Brees, maybe. I don't have the numbers in front of me, I have the names, but I think that kind of is an intriguing move for people. People want to make that splash move. That people know that, you know, we're a consistent top 10 to 12-ish quarterback range away from being consistent Super Bowl contenders, which, you know, we saw in one year with Case Keenum, with everything we had this year, that we can get to the NFC Championship. But I think folks are like, maybe Kirk Cousins can take us over that last hurdle to get to that point. So I think that's just the rationale people have. People, you know, they see the big name, they see the stats, and they see all that, and they just get excited about what that could potentially be in a Vikings offense. Just because, as great as Case Keenum was this last year, and this is volume stats, by the way, that I'm kind of arguing, but like folks would love to see a quarterback in Minnesota throw for, you know, 4,200 yards and 30 touchdowns. I know it doesn't equate to wins, but I know folks here would just help validate things for them. Because on the outside, they love to look at the volume stats, because that's, you know, it's an easier stat to reference. So I think that would excite people a lot. People want to see the full capability of this offense with a better version of Case Keenum, in a sense. As great as Case Keenum was this last year, I think there definitely were some things that still kind of held him back a bit. So I think people see Kirk Cousins as being that next plateau with this team to take this team over the hump. So I can understand the rationale. Just obviously, like we've said, I think the money's the biggest factor there.
Yeah, and you know, I've also argued on Twitter that, you know, using last year as like your one sample on Kirk Cousins isn't fair. As JR alluded to, You know, the weaponry around him was not what it has been in years past. Things weren't great for him. But I think that's also a good place to evaluate a quarterback, because if you're just evaluating them when things are great, you're probably not getting the full picture, because things likely aren't going to be great all the time. But Maz, you raised a really good point that I'll flip to JR first here, because Kirk Cousins has great stats, great efficiency, you know, all of those things you can see. He's been great for a lot of people in fantasy football, which I think we all know helps to shape people's perception of players. But if you go look at, you know, Pro Football Focus, which is, you know, tape evaluation and someone kind of grading him throw by throw, you know, in this past season, Kirk Cousins was ranked right after Andy Dalton and right before Blake Bortles. Obviously, one season, but when you look at kind of how good his stats are and then maybe what his tape is, like, who is the real Kirk Cousins, yeah?
And that's why I say Kirk Cousins goes as his supporting cast goes. You talk about guys like Terrell Pryor, who was a bust for them this year. Vernon Davis wasn't healthy. Jordan Reed can never stay healthy. They just didn't really have any weapons on the perimeter for him. And their running game took a step back as well because their offensive line was so banged up. Scherf was banged up. Obviously, Trent Williams was banged up throughout the year as well. And just when things break down for him or when things go off script and they suffer some injuries, you're just not able to see the full potential of him because he needs that surrounding cast around him to uplift him. And that's not saying Kirk Cousins is a bad quarterback, but he's not a guy that can carry an offense if there's poor surroundings around him like a Drew Brees or an Aaron Rodgers can do. So, and that's what gives me pause about giving him elite quarterback money, because if I'm going to give a guy elite quarterback money, I expect him to carry this offense if it does suffer some injuries, or if the lack of talent, or if it has a lack of talent on the perimeter. Like we see, I even consider a guy like Russell Wilson to be in that elite category because he has some weapons surrounding him, but his offensive line is always pedestrian, but their offense is always one of the tops in the league. So if I'm going to give somebody that elite money, it would be guys like that and not Kirk Cousins that's so dependent on so many variables around him working out perfectly.
Yeah, man. And to kind of echo the point that Yinka made just a little bit ago when he was talking about, you know, our man Tyrod Taylor, again, one season sample. We already talked about some of the full career numbers, but if we're looking back at last year, you know, we're saying Kirk Cousins, his weaponry was not good. Things around him weren't good. But even if you're just looking at, because, you know, a lot of times people are going to say, well, Tyrod Taylor, because of the running, when you look at his pass grade on Pro Football Focus for last year, it was also superior to that of Kirk Cousins. So, again, yeah, just, you know, surprising to me that maybe not so surprising, but a little surprising that, you know, folks seem so opposed to the idea of Tygo coming to Minnesota if we were to bring him in as a veteran. But yeah, I think that's it for that topic. We talked enough about Kirk. Something I guess I feel a little bad bringing this one up, because, you know, we took a break from football because of kind of everything that was going on. And, you know, Saxy Prince, you're in the car. I'll start with you on this one because you might be looking out the window to see a little bit of it. But you know, it's the Super Bowl.
It is.
In Minneapolis.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, man. Like, what's the atmosphere like? Like, how has it been? I know, like, on a lot of the podcasts and everything I listen to, folks have been saying that there was, like, just a sadness on the city for a little while there. But now that, like, things have really kicked off and the teams are in town and, like, all the media and everything else is going on, like, has that changed at all? Do people look like they're embracing it? Or is it still just kind of like, ugh, I can't believe this is happening to my city after the way that game went?
No, I mean, I think from my perspective, my younger brother's birthday was earlier this week, and we went out to Ruth Chris. And, I saw Kurt Warner there. I saw Kyle Rudolph there. And, you know, I've seen various pictures on Twitter and stuff about, you know, just people just – you go into the Mall of America, and the media really seems to be kind of embracing our city. And that was kind of like my biggest concern is, you know, I didn't feel like Minneapolis was quite ready as they got closer, but you know, we're enjoying it. And just, you know, we haven't had this much celebrity, I guess, in one sitting or whatnot. So I would say, for my feel of everything, it feels like the city's excited. There are events constantly going on. I think people are, you know, in a good mood and, you know, ready for the Super Bowl to happen. I think it's definitely been a kind of an exhausting football season. So I think it's less of, oh, we didn't make it to the, you know, to the Super Bowl sadness. But I mean, I think there is a little bit, like, the season has been really, really long for, you know, the state of Minnesota. So maybe just like some exhaustion that goes along with that. But otherwise, I think, yeah, I think everybody's been real excited and whatnot.
How about you, Miles? Where are you at with it? Because I know there was like a hot second there where you were like, man, if I run into any of them Eagles fans in the street, like you were a little pressed for just a little bit after the game. And then, you know, it feels like you then went to work and were like, yo, you need to send me up out of town, you know, and you've been on the road a little bit here. But now that you're back in, you know, in the environment, looking around and stuff, like, you know, how is it dealing with the fact that, you know, you got all these people in the city playing in a game that we let ourselves believe we might be playing in?
So to be honest, where I live in St. Paul, so I haven't really seen it. And where my office is at work, I'm right across the street from the stadium, but it's on the out. It's like close. It's in the, on the St. Paul side of it. So like, it's not in the heart of downtown. So I'm not really like in it. So I haven't really seen as much. And I was gone. I've been gone the last 2 days out of town for work, but in general, I haven't really seen too much. I don't try to venture downtown Minneapolis often anyway. So, the only thing I really noticed is just like the, how much parking goes up and all the restaurants and stuff like that. But I haven't really seen too much of it. But getting through the, at the airport, when I just got back, there was like people greeting us, being like, welcome to Minnesota, you know, the Super Bowl, all this type of stuff. So that was kind of cool just to kind of see all the cool signage and all the cool, decor that they kind of had going on. But I haven't really fully seen everything, and I haven't really ventured downtown. I probably won't.
Yeah, once you get to downtown, I think you start to see a little bit more. You see obviously the Super Bowl like colors and schemes and stuff, and you obviously see like a lot more of the restaurants, you know, trying to cater towards this Super Bowl, you know, and advertising and whatnot. Buses have you know, Super Bowl type things, you know, on their signage and stuff. So yeah, it's the city is vibrant. So.
It's embraced. They're embracing it. I think it's really cool. I took the light rail to work yesterday because I had to go to the airport, and I got dropped off right at US Bank Stadium, and all the stuff around it was really cool, except for seeing Eagles and Patriot stuff on Viking stuff was not cool, but just the atmosphere in general looked really cool. So I like that a lot.
Awesome. 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 Well, you know, enough of that. We won't make you guys tell us too much more about the party going on in the city there. JR, I know, you know, resident football junkie. And while the rest of us may have taken a little bit of a break to exhale and put football a little bit further to the back of our minds, we know you went headlong into all things football, off-season draft and all that. But I know, we haven't talked about it, but I know that you've probably done a little bit of digging, looking into this matchup that is about to happen. So I guess give us your thoughts on the matchup between the Pats and the Eagles and what people really should be looking out for in terms of how these two teams match up.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating matchup. I watched a couple games on both teams. I already had some recent memory from some Philly games due to preparing for the Vikings matchup against them. But it's really a fascinating matchup, and you talk about some really strong minds going against each other, you know, and Doug Peterson and Bill Belichick, a mastermind on defense going against an up-and-coming creative mind in Doug Peterson and Matt Patricia as well. And I'm most intrigued by how he counter-reacts or what schemes and RPOs does he specialize in against Matt Patricia's defense. That's the biggest matchup that I'm looking forward to. Of course, Tom Brady against their defense is another fascinating matchup, how Josh McDaniels will react to Jim Schwartz's defense. We all know, I actually was listening to, I think it was Peter King, I want to say. I can't remember the exact number, but he said there's a magic number that you have to get as far as pressures on Tom Brady for him to break down. And I can't remember what that exact number is, but I'm sure
Philadelphia does have some schemes that they're going to scheme for Tom Brady as far as to get pressure and move him off his spots, because we all know he's not as mobile as he once was. And if you make him move around in the pocket a little bit, you can force him into some bad decisions. Gronk has been cleared, so that's another weapon that they have to prepare for, and I'm sure that they have been preparing for him these past 2 weeks. And I mean, everybody knew he was going to play, even if, you know, he put himself in harm's way. I think he was going to find a way to get clear for this game because it is the Super Bowl. But anyway, I think another fascinating matchup is the Patriots' weapons on the perimeter against that Eagles secondary and matching up with Gronk. What specific schemes will Jim Schwartz come up with to try to eliminate Gronk and eliminate or even limit Brandon Cooks and Danny Amendola? So there's a lot of fascinating matchups overall, but I'm really intrigued by how these head coaches and coordinators go against each other. That's what I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, and you brought up kind of the common narrative that I think we hear a lot, and I think it goes back to, you know, probably I guess the first time the Giants took out the Patriots, where they were able to just rush for and beat Brady up, and, you know, even still they needed some miraculous things to happen, but they won the game. And since that time, it's kind of galvanized that narrative, which is true. I mean, think for all quarterbacks, you mean you hit them, they don't play as well, but it's really galvanized that narrative that, you know, you hit Tom Brady, he's not going to play as well, and you can beat them. But Warren Sharp, who is one of the brightest people who writes and covers and talks about football, he put out a piece that I'll link to in the show notes, but it was a really interesting premise in that if everyone knows how to beat Tom Brady, quote unquote, but Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time, do we really think that Bill Belichick is going to let a team beat his team by doing the same thing the Giants did to beat them all those years ago? And it kind of gets into the fact that, you know, the counter that the Patriots have used when they go against teams with really great pass rushes is the halfback pass, and how that is what he kind of sees as being the X factor in this game. I guess, you know, just obviously, I'm not sure if you've read the article, but with me just kind of throwing this out for you right now, I guess, what are your thoughts on that analysis, that really the thing that, you know, the Patriots can do to alleviate some of that pressure that, you know, we saw the Eagles can bring with that front four is really to get the running backs involved in that that passing game and really try to get matched up on those linebackers from the Eagles.
Yeah, and it makes sense, and I'll definitely make sure to check out that article. And if there is one weak spot on the Eagles defense, I think it is that linebacker core. They don't have a lot of notable names there. Danielle Ellerby didn't play against the Vikings, but he's probably one of the better linebackers in that core. Nigel Bradham is a good player, and Michael Kendricks has had a career resurgence this year, and one of the biggest reasons why that defense has taken another step up into the potential elite category. But, you know, we all know New England has a plethora of running backs in their backfield, and they all use them in special ways. And we all know Tom Brady is very reliant on running back routes. As far as out of the backfield, Deion Lewis is an incredible weapon that they have out of the backfield. And they even incorporate James White and all the other backs that they have in the backfield. And it's kind of like, I kind of compare it to a bullpen and a pitching rotation. It's kind of like whichever guy is hot that day is going to get the ball. And whenever they need another guy, they can just go to the bullpen, depending on the type of team that they're playing and how they can exploit that matchup. That's really who's going to get the ball that day. So I think that's a key matchup to look in on and focus on, how they get the running backs in space and make their linebackers or force their linebackers to make plays on their running backs in space.
Yeah, man. And, you know, I don't know if you have Miles, Yinka, have y'all really dug into this matchup at all? Or are you just going to kind of tune in and watch as a fan, or are you even watching the game? Like, what's going on with that? We really haven't talked about it. How y'all dealing with the Super Bowl?
Who cares? No. No, I really haven't dove into it. It's hard to have a vested interest in, like, diving deep into a game that, like, your team's not a part of. We dove into the Eagles, so we kind of know. But I'm curious to see their game plan on offense to kind of see what they do against the Patriots, because we've seen them do, you know, a numerous amount of things. Like, they went off cuff against us. We expected them to kind of try to bully ball us, and they they spread us apart and let Nick Foles throw it around the yard. Is that what they do against the Patriots this week in the Super Bowl? I don't know. So that'll be a curious one. And then the obvious one that JR pointed out about is Gronk. Like, he's one of the hardest players in the NFL, if not the hardest player in the NFL to kind of defend one-on-one just because of his size and speed and all that. So I'm just curious to see what the Eagles are going to do.
Okay, and Saxy Prince, did we lose you? Yep, Saxy Prince is gone. He let us know he was going to leave, so we won't blame this one on his interwebs. He actually had, you know, a gig to go to. So he talked to us in the car. He's at the gig, so no more analysis from Saxy Prince. And I'm kind of with Miles on this one. I certainly have not dug deep into these matchups at all. Read some articles here and there, but don't care enough to really get into this Eagles Patriots matchup. I guess we'll go to the next thing. But I kind of want to ask as well, who you guys actually like? Are you cheering for anyone? Do you have a vested interest in who wins? Like, JR, do you care? Because I know that you know, we've seen some things on the social media, you know, Vikings fans, go Pats, which I really don't understand. Are you like where like the Eagles fans were so mean to our fans and they beat us so bad that you're like, you really want the Pats to win? Or is it that you want the team that whooped your behind to end up being the team that wins the tournament? Like, who you going for in this one?
Nah, I don't have a horse in this race, but I do want the Eagles to win because of this. My dad, he's an Eagles fan, 58 years old. He's never seen his team win a Super Bowl, and I think that would be a really special moment for him. He's a super diehard Eagles fan. He's a bigger Eagles fan than I am, a Vikings fan, believe it or not. He's seen his team get there plenty of times. Broke his heart against the Patriots. I'm not sure exactly what year that was with the whole T.O. and Donovan McNabb Super Bowl. And it would just be a really special moment to see my dad experience the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. So that's one of the biggest reasons why I want the Eagles to win.
Okay. All right. So just like your pops, you wouldn't pick the team that doesn't win anything either. That makes some sense now. Apple tree and all that good stuff. So, are we doing bold predictions, score predictions? Because, like, I really will just be, like, throwing numbers, you know, just throwing stuff out there because I really, like, I have not dug into this at all. I got nothing. Miles, you got anything? I got nothing. JR, what's your bold prediction, your score prediction?
It seems to always be a close game whenever the Patriots do win a Super Bowl. So, I think I want the Eagles to win, and that's just with my heart. But my head is telling me that the Patriots – are going to win, and I think they'll win, let's say, 27-24.
All right. Okay. We'll take that. And, yo, I mean, we can't wrap this thing up. I mean, JR, you put it out there.
I'll just fade off into the distance.
You're going to make stuff up?
I'm just going to fade off. Miles. You brought my name up twice, but you didn't ask me any questions.
But you said didn't care. I didn't want to ask you a question. You didn't care. But I want you
I'll
to
just fade. Fade.
Nah, bro. You have to answer this question.
I got a Super Bowl prediction.
It's the most important question.
I have a bold prediction.
Waffles or pancakes, though? Because, you know, this was out there, and, like, folks had some strong opinions on this one.
They really did.
People had some really strong opinions on this
one. It was a lot to a little.
Yeah.
It was. So
where you at, Miles? Surprised. Waffles, so, pancakes. What you feeling?
I mean, it's waffles, but, like, I really like pancakes. Like, but waffles are a lot more versatile. You can do a lot more with them. Like the fried chicken and waffles. I mean, come on now. I think that was that's like the wrap right there.
Game changer.
But I really like pancakes. I think for me, waffles are like it doesn't just have to be a breakfast food, but pancakes, like, you know, it's breakfast. So, like, but, like, I like, yeah, I don't know. I like both, but I'm definitely taking waffles. But I'm not going to hate on pancakes the way some of those savages were destroying it like it was terrible.
The pancake slander was real. Where are you at with it?
Yeah, some people were saying, like, oh, they're nasty when they get soggy. I'm just like, wow.
I mean, they're soggy because you put syrup on them. And syrup is delicious. Like,
hey, but I do. Do you ever do peanut butter and syrup on your pancakes?
No.
It's bomb.
That is a negative, no. Miles Gorham.
Is that a Minnesota thing?
No, I learned it in North Carolina, actually.
Oh, wow. I've never heard of
it. I didn't learn in North Carolina. I just wanted to throw that at you. Just to throw some shade. Wow. But I think I just tried it one day, and it was good, and I liked it. I don't know. If you like peanut butter.
I'm a waffle guy, personally. I enjoy the pockets on the waffle because they just secure your syrup. And, you know, just syrup on your butter are the most important parts, whether it's a waffle or a pancake. I don't like my stuff sliding everywhere. So just having those pockets on the waffle, that just seals the deal for me. And a game changer, like you said already, is, I mean, you can get so many different sides with waffles and you can just put it on top. Fried chicken is a great example to have as a side with waffles as well. And I just think that's a game changer. Also, I want to throw this in there. I figured out my bold prediction. Super Bowl MVP, James Harrison.
Woo! Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, Miles, Miles, do you have any upcoming projects that we should be on the lookout for?
No. I've been working on the draft a lot lately. I've been looking at a lot of the college players, and I'm trying to dive into a little bit of the free agency stuff too. So I'm just kind of like, receivers. Yeah, you know, but that's just a given. It's just easy for me.
Why neither of y'all respond to my Calvin Ridley slander earlier today?
I didn't see it. I've been on a plane.
And I'm tired of the Calvin Ridley.
You were on a plane. I mean, but, you know, I mean, it's got to mean a little something. It's
what
just looking
your,
at all the
old. Your slander?
I just saw somebody tweet. It was, you know, looking at, you know, receivers taking the first and second round who happened to be real old and how their performance projected
when they
made it to the league. Pardon me? Yeah, like, you know, you had Kelvin Benjamin. It was a fantasy related thing. So I think you had Kelvin Benjamin and one other of the people in the list who'd posted wide receiver one seasons, and all the rest pretty much were bust. So I don't know.
I have a hard time seeing a wide receiver go in the top 15 picks this year.
Oh, that's bold.
I don't think it's that bold. I say that just because of all the other needs, and I think free agency and stuff like that will just kind of sort that out a little bit for some people.
I think really we'll go top 15.
Because there are so many good wide receiver twos, I think teams are going to understand that, and they're going to wait a little bit. Kind of like a running back in a sense that we've seen the last couple of years. People have decided to wait and hedge their bets on some of these, and because you're getting a lot quicker returns on some of these receivers. We won't name the ones that we don't get returns from, but
I'm gonna start calling Miles. His new nickname is Matt Millen because he loves receivers.
Oh no! Oh no!
Man, are you saying I strike out on receivers too?
Oh, no,
like,
man.
I'm just messing.
You might have to you got to veto that, Miles. You can't let that stick. How about you, JR? We know it. I mean, it's draft season, so I mean, you probably got about 10 things in your drafts right now. What's the next one we should be looking out for?
Nah, I'm actually just churning out the database right now. I kind of want to wait to release another mock draft until after the combine. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to release one right now because a lot of things are going to change after the combine once I get a good glance at some guys and get some actual measurements and test results. I know a lot of nerds are waiting on these test results from these guys at the combine. So I'm actually taking a more analytical or factoring in some analytical things this year. So I'm looking forward to doing that and factoring it into my draft grades.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. And I guess for both of you guys, Miles, you first, then JR, quarterback, obviously biggest question, biggest need for the team as we move forward. What would be the rest of your top three, Miles, if you were looking at, you know, positions that we need to address right away, be it free agency at the draft or top of the draft if we strike out in free agency?
Definitely three tech, okay. You know, defensive tackle. I think that's if it's not quarterback, you know, obviously if you take quarterback aside, I think that's the biggest need for this team. And then I think we need to add another cornerback and interior offensive lineman would be my top three, not including quarterback.
Okay. How about you, JR?
Yeah, I'm with that. I think it's too early to talk about the whole quarterback thing because we don't know exactly what the outcome is going to be on whether we need to draft one or not. I still think they need to draft one no matter what, so I'll go ahead and include that in my top three needs. And I think either a guard or a tackle. I would probably go with guard because Joe Berger is expected to retire. So I put guard on there, and I would put defensive tackle as the other need.
Okay. All right. And, yeah, for me, obviously quarterback is quarterback. It is what it is. But when I went through and kind of and ran the numbers from Pro Football Focus for the last season, I was surprised, you know, with as much as the Vikings offensive line improved, I guess just coming from how terrible it had been in previous seasons, I was surprised that for Minnesota, the three worst kind of cumulatively graded position groups for us were each of the positions across the offensive line. So in terms of, I guess, where I would rank what I wanted to do in the offseason, quarterback obviously needs to be figured out first. Tackle would probably be next up, and then I'm riding with Miles there on three tech. I think you alluded to it before we played the Eagles, JR, that you know, we were pretty thin at that position even this season, and you know, Tom Johnson is even older than he was this past year, so we're definitely gonna need to do something about that. So that's where I'm at with it. And yeah, I think with that, I think we covered everything we want to talk about today, plus some extra stuff. Yeah, I think that'll be it. We'll probably start the music right around now. Gentlemen, it's been too long. Good to be back on with you guys and listeners. You know, apologies for taking a little bit of time away, but we are back. We will be on a more regular recording and podcast release schedule now as we get into the off season. And yeah, we'll talk to you again soon. Have a good one.